In the Belly of a Clothes Rack by Crystal Ann Williams. The air is sweet with a new clothes smell, still, and so dry your nostrils contract. Whenever we shop, Mama and me, I would hide in the bellies of clothes racks. I liked sitting there, looking up at the drop ceiling as the dimmed, fluorescent light filtered down through the clothes that people had tossed, and I counted. I counted how many tags pushed their way toward me, how many one-armed hangers fell on me, and how many manicured nails twisted hangers off the rack. I liked listening, too. There were heels clicking, muted voices whispering, and Mama's voice, humming softly, drifting over the racks to my cocooned ears. I pretended to be a crouched tigress, unseen and unheard, but hearing and hunting, placing myself at the throats of shoppers, trying to anticipate their next move. That day, a daughter pleaded, her voice gathered at the end of hysteria. "But mother, I just can't wear that." It was a good game to wonder from whose lips the words had come. Saks Fifth Avenue was my favorite because it was library quiet. There were no children shrieking or threatening to encroach on my world of beige sleeves and price tags. There was no being bumped by elbows, no trailing behind my mother as she shopped. It was a good deal. Mama knew where I was, and I knew where she was, her humming a buoy. I should have been listening for Mama, but I was too busy pouting about the cold ice and the blood I could still taste on the inside of my lip after my failed attempt at a double Lutz. So when I readjusted my ears, I realized that there was no humming. I scrambled out of the clothes rack and stood on tiptoe trying to find her, but I was too short. So I jumped up and down, my feet pounding the vanilla tile. That didn't work either. So I stood and called until all sounds shrank in a receding crouch from my body. She wasn't there. I couldn't see. There was nothing but my shrill voice begging for Mama. Frozen in the middle of the ladies' dresses department, I remembered Mama's words. "If we ever get separated, just stay put. I'll find you." So that's what I did. My eyes searched the aisles, finding only a little girl in a pink and blue sundress who collided with her mother, who had stopped short to glare at me. A security guard who looked like my cousin Mac, his dark face surrounding Barbie doll red lips, stood at his post near the down escalator, a short distance away, beckoning. And then my pupils darkened and were filled with a stern-faced, spectacled white woman. "Little girl, what is it you're doing?" she hissed.
"Looking for my mother."
"Your mother is not here."
"Yes, she is. She's here. She was just here."
"Girl." Her head tilted down, allowing her eyes to peer over the racks and then back at me. "There is no one here who could be your mother. She certainly isn't here." And then, under her breath, she whispered, "And what would she be doing here if she were?" Her face was angular. Her hair was brown and short and haphazardly placed. Her suit was blue. A delicate Jesus swayed across her chest. The lapel pin she wore glinted in the faded light. It was then, when I was 7, on that Saturday afternoon at the Saks and Fairland Mall in Dearborn, Michigan, that I knew that the clarity of my family, my father's black, leathery skin, the smooth milk of my mother's white skin, and the brown sugar of my skin, was obscured. The saleswoman didn't understand, but I did. I knew the implication. I'd seen it before, but I hadn't known what it was, hadn't known it was directed at me. Even as I could hear Mama's, "Chris? Chrissy?" I understood what being lost meant. Being lost is to look in the face of a speckled white woman and wonder what the gnawed ball making its way from your stomach to your throat is called.